underground espionage episode. Actually, I forgot to look.
Like 24
number. I think we something are 24.
Like that? Yeah, you know what? We can guess. Let's guess. 24. 24.
I do believe it is 24. Yes, it is.
You just confirmed it.
It is episode 24. Terra, Super Terra,
Super Terra, Super Mike.
How are you doing?
You know, if we have been out of town, if we have done too much, if we have gone to a place with pollen and animals, that I am gonna be sick. So yes, that is right. Yet again, I am riled up. I'm gonna be coughing. I'm gonna be disgusting. It's just how it goes. It's the price you play. You pay when you play too hard.
Well, I think that one of the themes of underground espionage in general is varying degrees of sickness and hangovers. So it's like each episode is like, is one of them sick or is one of them hungover?
Mildly hungover. No, that's true. That's good. Or both.
Well, I'm saying I'm not at all. We haven't. We actually. No. I'm patting ourselves on the back.
Pat yourself and don't break your wrist there, sir.
Oh. I'm basically
dry as a desert.
Yeah,
that's right. Dry is my throat.
So not hungover, but you are sick. I was just feeling. Couldn't tell if it was a work or if I was. I was feeling definitely just a little bit out of sorts. But I mean, we did. Fly directly to our DJ night over at the Mermaid Surf and Dead.
Yes, we flew from a place. Are we like?
Well, why, I wasn't getting so specific, but yes,
we flew from a place.
We were in Kentucky, drove to Nashville, flew from
directly from Nashville to Los Angeles, took a Lyft, and then I changed
at the airport.
I put my makeup on in the plane. And then I changed at the bathroom at the airport, and then we took a lift out to a delicious eatery.
Yes.
Where we then directly went to the DJ night.
Yes, and so it was, you know, it's a if I was telling my 25-year-old self I was doing that, I'd be like, yeah, that's what you do
totally
all the time.
Reasonable.
Nowadays, that is not exactly how we
look,
do things.
Given the pollen nature of the world, the springtime bloom, everything. Yeah, of course I was going to get sick the first day.
Yeah, we
and that's
that.
What happened. But you know what was great? I will say the amazing part about Kentucky this time of year, the cicadas were phenomenal.
Yeah, it sounded great.
Like listening to the cicadas because they had that like wild oscillation and at different points they would kind of sync up.
Yeah,
it
sounded
and
awesome.
As you moved around, you could like feel the waves of the cicada sound kind of hit differently. So it would just like wobble, 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 wobble,
yeah.
You know, just like you were passing oscillating waves. So that was really exciting.
That was cool.
We went to investigate the primary sound source of the cicadas back in this like weeping willow. And like as we walked closer, it just got louder and louder and louder, and the branches were just covered in cicadas. That was cool.
Yeah, it was cool. It was
seeing the cicada killer, like the cicada killer wasp. That was really neat. Found out that it was going in these holes, and I was like, oh, it's got a little hole. And you know, we thought maybe they're mole holes or vole holes because we heard a lot of talk about moles and voles because that's what you talk about in the bluegrass state. However, these were not mole holes nor were they vole holes. They were cicada holes, and guess what? That cicada killer wasp was going in looking for a little cicada so he could punch him, poison him, lay his little eggs on him, and have the eggies hatch out and eat that cicada. How exciting is that?
Eating it right up. No, it's cool.
Gory reality of life.
Absolutely. But yeah, just directly back to the DJ, and I had a great time. Saw some friends, did get to reconnect and see one Mr. Mark Jameson.
Oh, that was such a treat.
That was cool.
That was a reason to rally right there.
That was cool. So, yeah, so we had about a 24-hour day that day and then was able to, well, we did, and I'm sure people can relate, you know, that thing where you're so tired. You know, fell right asleep, but then woke up way too early and definitely was like concerned, like, all right, we cannot be getting up because we will both get really sick.
Yeah.
You will get more sick. So we rallied sleep.
Well, I had a brilliant move. I took two Robitussin and then I took a Benadryl. In the morning, and a nice two Robitussin Benadryl in the morning, that'll put you right back out.
So we did go back out, and then
And I feel much better now.
And watch.
And here we are today. And boy, we have learned lessons. We've experienced.
Did you hear me trying to set up what we watched? And then you just like jumped on me on that. I said, we got up and we watched. And I was about to announce the movie.
Oh, the movie.
And you jumped all over me.
Well, I wasn't prepared to talk about that yet. You jumped all over me like one of the.
I wasn't about to talk about the movie either.
Yet.
I'm setting it up. Mm. Tara. I know we missed a week of the podcast, but
you
I know you know
me
how
with
to podcast.
It like a pair of jiggling breasts.
And you jumped on me like one of these big tittied chicks in the movie Super Vixens. You know we
or
had to come back
Super
a
Vixens.
Week off. So you know we had to come back with an absolute classic, a movie that was made for underground espionage. So yes, today's movie is going to be Super Vixens, but we're not getting into
joy.
It just yet.
It was
we're still,
an absolute joy.
We're still
what a
chatting.
Wonderful
we're not,
balm.
We're not diving into the movie yet. We're still just catching up with the listeners, catching up with each other. You have a nice glass of wine going.
Yeah, I had one sip of it so thus far.
But it's perfect because we were just listening to one of the new hospital releases. Tara, you need to say it, please.
Pont Alexandre III.
And
Tres.
It is fantastic, right up our alley. It's actually
Tres will be 13.
We've been doing some other stuff today, so it's the first thing of the new stuff we've gotten a chance to listen to. Terry, what?
I had to think about the third. I couldn't remember the word for the third in
you're
French.
Keep going,
yeah.
But what is fitting is that we had mentioned to Becca a few weeks ago that we were going to drink some wine and listen to some of the other the. Last
Some
new hospital
other releases.
And so now she's been very like the idea of us drinking wine and listening to stuff has been on her
but
brain.
But this is a perfect thing to drink wine and listen
and
to.
She said that. She goes, you guys are going to really love it. It's going to be something you're going to like to drink wine and listen to. And guess what?
I was like, I could really go for a wine.
Yeah, it's really good. Definitely up our alley. Great, minimal, dark, very
melodic.
But just that great, ambient, dark.
Haunted melody
that we absolutely love, right up our alley.
Yeah.
They were correct, and all the other new releases look great. We'll probably get around to them later tonight and tomorrow. But we've been working on some other stuff.
I think it has like
today.
The Pont Alexandre the Third.
The name literally
has
fits it. The cover and the name just it is what it looks and sounds like.
The Bridge in Paris is what
it's fantastic.
But it has It has a quality of a timelessness to it.
Yeah.
It is melodic at times, but then kind of disintegrates into something that would have just been maybe the hinting in a melody or a thought like a ghost. It has an elegance to it, but also it's not overly polished.
Exactly.
It's all of those things.
Exactly. So really great. Obviously, go to pick up the new hospital stuff. Obviously, make sure to get your tickets if you haven't for New York coming up fast.
It is, and I'm glad because I've been really excited about it.
We're excited. Our flights. Once you get that flight, it's like real official.
We had the flights. We had a couple hotel rooms. Just kind of given. We decided on one of the hotel rooms.
Here's
canceled
the,
one.
Travel
set,
tip.
Got another
travel
one.
Travel tip. For people who, and I don't know if people realize
we got a bunch of travel tips. Let's give our travel tips in this episode.
Well, I'm going to give this travel tip for hotels for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the times, now it is different sites have different things, but usually you can just reserve the hotel and pay at the desk, usually the exact same price if you paid that when you reserved it. Sometimes it's a few bucks more, but
it's not exorbitant.
It's worth just doing.
Yeah.
So that you have that, you're secure, you got it. Like, you're done. You don't have to, like, worry about it.
That's that.
And
I have a room.
And if you do it when you decide you're going to do the trip, already it's going to be a little cheaper no matter what. Like, so just reserve the room. It's no sweat off anything. And you can.
Yeah.
So we did. We literally reserved, like, three hotels because we weren't 100% sure where we wanted to stay.
Yeah.
And just canceled the ones we weren't going to do and didn't pay. We're going to pay at the desk. Done.
So don't have to pay. You can cancel them. Canceling is free in this case, not always, but in this
case.
Well,
you got to obviously got to make sure.
In this hotel. Yeah, you got to confirm that stuff. I don't know what type of hotels you may be
staying
in.
I do. That's my job.
Now, the other travel tips that we have would be surrounding the type of identification you carry with you. If you plan on traveling anywhere in the continental United States, Apparently, there is a suggestion that one possess a real ID.
Well, it's not a suggestion, and
it is a suggestion because it says if you don't have your real ID, then you will face lengthy what are those called? Screening times.
Yeah.
And that screening is not actually screening. It's more of like a finger wagging and a lecture, shaming lecture.
And don't respond to this or at us because every single person we bring it up to, they're like, oh, you didn't know? Oh, you didn't know? Like, you know what? You know what? In my mind, honestly, I knew this thing was coming up in my mind because we renew our license next year. I thought for whatever reason it was next year, and I was like, "Oh, we don't have to worry about that because it's just
we don't have to bring our real IDs."
So
they're not.
Don't respond.
Yet.
Don't yell at the speaker right now when
we're
talking.
No, they can yell at the speaker. I don't care. I don't mind.
Get off your high horse.
I don't really mind. You can get on your high horse and say like, "I got the real ID as soon as somebody even mentioned it the first time. I love getting new IDs. It's a treat for me. I can't wait." That's fine. That's the type of person you are. But like we kind of thought it was like a suggestion. And we see the line that's like increased weight. Like, I can wait. I'm there early. It's fine. But I think we were hassled independently. But I do think my favorite line of questioning at the airport was, why don't you have a real ID?
Oh, it's because I was hoping to have a bit of a hassle at the airport. Airports are...
I wanted to see what you would do.
I find airports to be totally soothing, unstressful. I just wanted a little bit of stress.
Everybody's always been so warm and welcoming. I just thought I'd see. But it's like, why don't you have one? And it's just kind of like one of those questions. Like, this is a very complicated question. Like, why don't you have one? Like... I didn't think about it. I didn't know it'd be required. I didn't know you would be here. I didn't know that this would be a conversation. He goes, have you applied for it yet? And I go, no. I haven't. I haven't applied for it. I said, but I will. I promise I'll do it as soon as
you
let me go home. If you let me go from Nashville to Los Angeles, I'm going to run right to the DMV. I promise you. And I looked at him and I was like, look, if I would have known it was a thing, I would have brought my passport. I have a passport.
Look,
I just didn't know.
Look,
I'm sorry.
We're pretty good travelers. We rarely drop the ball. It was one ball we dropped. But it wasn't also like, it's obviously not even that big a deal because they were just sort of like, yeah, whatever. Like,
okay, but here's some travel tips. Because I mean,
Oh, but wait.
Because if everybody's traveling, I'm going to give some travel tips.
I wanted to say I did have a flashing fantasy though of like, what if they won't let us on the plane, and then we have to rent a car and have a impromptu
trip. I was like, that would be sick. That would be awesome.
I mean, it would be like way too expensive, and like we can't. It's not something we could really do right now. But
no, I'd love that.
If it was literally like we were forced to do it, I have this tinge of excitement that we were going to have an impromptu road trip.
I would love it. Oh, God. I love it. I'll drive from fucking Nashville. We can do it in 2 or 3 days. We're good. We're happy as a clam in a car. Now, okay, my new...
That'd be more of like a 5-day, but sorry. Go ahead.
We went from Kentucky to here took 4 days, right?
When
we picked up our car.
Yeah.
4 days.
I guess we could do it in 4 days.
And then the last trip was just, the last leg was just from Vegas, and that was a short one, so we could do it in 3 days.
Oh, yeah, Vegas.
Sir, come on. We're road dogs.
I mean.
We're old road dogs. Now, listen, I know you've been trying to put these off, but Mike, you have encouraged me to know these travel tips. And we're talking about
people
who may
be going
to
New York in
October. They may be going to New York in October. So, first tip, the real ID thing, they're going to give you some shit. Just understand that's a thing. Bring your passport if you have one. If you don't, just be prepared to have answers to these dumb questions.
Or if you don't have a passport, you can just apply for a real ID, and I think it's just easy to do.
Well, I'm just saying we don't know. We haven't done it yet. I'm just saying have answers to the dumb questions. Bring your passport or just be prepared for the dumb questions because they're not going to like kick you out. Second, the thing on liquids is not the same as it used to be. They really don't give a shit about liquids that much anymore. I didn't separate it in my liquids. I just don't care. I didn't do anything. Left my contacts took all my makeup. They do not give a shit.
I mean, also, we're telling you our experience. Do your own research. No. So, don't.
Yeah, don't be, bringing whole bottles of shampoo or anything.
You might be able to, but
within reason, have a travel size and they don't care. You don't always have to take your laptop out. You don't always have to take your shoes off.
Didn't have to take my laptop
out. Well, you did when you didn't have a real ID.
I was
going
to say, didn't have to take it out from Nashville to LA, but did from LA to Nashville. So yeah. Every airport's different with that now, but I'm loving but not having to do it.
She made you do it because you didn't have
shoes.
A
shoes. Also, don't have
may
to come
may
off
not
anymore,
have
which
take
is
off.
Sweet.
I had to take mine off because they have hand
boots,
hand hammered nails in them. So yes, you did have to take those off. So that is bring a earbud splitter if you want to listen to the same thing. That's really fun to listen to the same thing, so you can kind of cackle together at everybody else. And that's it. Those are all my tips. I don't have any other ones.
Yeah. Look, excited to see everybody.
Take a Robitussin, like when you get on the plane, and it makes everything more chill.
I've said with Tussin, it's just it doesn't affect me the same way. I don't find it to be. I think it works in my chemistry different. Like it doesn't put me to sleep.
No, well, it didn't put me to sleep. It just makes me feel like
I don't know. It doesn't really clock. You know what I mean?
That's all right. The Tussin's not clocking with you. Okay, well, I'm out of travel tips. That's all I got. So that was. That was our grand adventure. I enjoyed the insects. We get to pet a lot of dogs. Really enjoy all the dogs we got to pet. It was really nice to hang out with those. I'm really allergic to all the greenery, but it was great. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the scene report.
Absolutely.
The scene report. I did have, let's see here.
Did you have any news that you wanted to share?
I have two bits of news.
Yeah, well, no, hey, we're don't.
One
don't,
thing that
don't
I'm really excited about, I've been talking about it for a week. I won't stop talking about it. There's some new eye drops that have come out called Viz, and they can when you lose your nearsightedness due to aging, they can enhance it. Now there have been other eye drops on the market that claim to have done this, but they caused weird buildups of fluids and blindness and retinal detachment. Not these. These are much safer. So I'm really excited and I can't wait for a lot of people to try them so that maybe I'm emboldened to try them again so that I can again see up close and not have to have readers or bifocals or anything of that nature. So that's one thing that's really exciting, everybody.
There you go.
I'm sure other people are excited about it too. To think that an eye drop could change your vision, wild. Secondly, this is, I think, old Russell Meyer would have something to say about this particular story, Mike, and I've been saving it. I wanted to show you. It is this place in Denmark. I'll just read the headline. Denmark to remove pornographic mermaid statue, reports say. So this Danish agency for palaces and culture has requested the removal of a 14-ton sculpture from Dragør Fort in Copenhagen. Now, we all know about the cute little ode to the Little Mermaid that sits out on a rock in the same very area. And, Mike, I'm going to show you now. This is the Little Mermaid. I think it's been around since 1910. It's a bronze statue.
I feel like I've seen it in person. When you just said that, mm-hmm. In my mind, I have seen it.
It's a cherished and beloved tourist spot.
But it's possible that I haven't, but mm-hmm. When you said it in my head, I'm like, oh, I've seen that.
And so after tourists complained that maybe it's too far away, maybe it's too small, maybe modern tourists that want kind of more of a photo opportunity, something of that nature, well, a gentleman stepped up to bat, and he made, instead of the Little Mermaid, he made the Big Mermaid, and he put it in place in that area at Langlinie Pier, which I don't know how to say, but we're just going to say it's that way in Denmark. Near the Little Mermaid in 2006, and people were outraged because they call it the fake and vulgar mermaid. Now, Mike, I'm going to show you this mermaid. What do you say the most noticeable difference?
Look at those big old tits.
Yeah, there's some big old... That mermaid has some tits.
Nice.
Now, you know, the people are speaking, and they're like, they say that it is ugly and pornographic, and it's a man's hot dream of what a woman should look like. And they say that it's marring the World Heritage Site, the 1910 Heritage Site. It's unlikely to, they say, erecting a statue of a man's hot dream of what a woman should look like is unlikely to promote many women's acceptance of their own bodies.
Wah, wah.
And what I'm saying is, you know, and they're saying, you know, it's truly uplifting that many find the statue vulgar, unpoetic, undesirable, because we're suffocating and overbearing bodies in public space. And so this is what I'm saying. Now, what I know which side that I think you're on, Mike. But you know, I've been kind of asking myself, like, why I'm on that side. It's like, why is it that the Little Mermaid are saying, like, because the Little Mermaid has tiny tits, that it's artful, and that just because this poor big mermaid was blessed with big knockers.
You know what? It's prejudice against big titted women.
I know. It's not fair. Just like the women in Russ Meyer's film, they're like, they're vulgar and obscene. It's like, it's not their fault that they were born with big naturals.
Justice for big titted women.
That's what I'm saying. Is, like, that why is it obscene? It's unfair.
That is the type of movement that we can get behind.
And I just say,
honestly, or in front of, really. Now, I'd like to get, I'd prefer to get in front of.
Now, I will say that, like, even if you look at it, like, I mean, look, the Big Mermaid's nips are really defined, like the areolas are kind of really carved out with a lot of detail.
Those are nice tits.
But the whole thing is, like, the Little Mermaid has equally nipped nips. It's just they're kind of, like, small and, like, I don't know, they kind of look like dog tits.
The
Little Mermaid kind of has like yeah, those kind of bulging pointy dog tits.
The new statue has better tits.
Yeah. And so I'm just saying, like, I don't know. Like, is it that maybe the Danish are just intimidated by nice tits?
Well, you know what? They might be. I don't know.
Is there
Danes.
Something inherently artless about big tits?
Absolutely not, Tara. And you know how we know that? Because we just watched one of the greatest, most artful movies of our time. Something very important to you and I. Early favorite director, early favorite movies. We're talking about Russ Meyer. We're talking about Super Vixens today.
What a gorgeous vision, stylized, classic hero's tale. Where,
it's a road story. It's like we've been on a journey, a road story. We could have had one of these road adventures that if they were not going to let us on the airplane.
But it is that type of classical tale, like much out of like Greek heroes tales.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like classic, a journey, somebody who's met with the pushback of the gods for whatever reason, and then he has to triumph. And I can't remember the word for it right now. I should have put some forethought into it so that I could really speak to it in an intelligent way, but instead I'm going to speak to it in a base way because it's hard not to have that wonderful basic instinct when you are watching a piece such as this.
Well, I think Russ Meyer would like us to discuss it that way. But, you know, it is exciting, Tara, before we get into the nitty gritty, the titty gritty, I guess you would say. It is really, really exciting because last year and this year, and I believe there will continue to do so, Severin has been releasing the Russ Meyer movies, Blu-ray, and it's just doing the world a service because for the longest time they've been in limbo. Mm-hmm. And Russ Meyer owned the rights to all his films, which is great, and released them on his own VHS. There's Laserdisc, and then there were some kind of crappy early DVDs.
Yeah.
But all that stuff went way out of print, and even with the VHS, all the VHS were always the rental price, so they'd always like $89, right? So he never bumped
cracked
it down. And you know,
the man did have some dough.
Well, yeah,
he did monetize it. Like, he actually
good for him. I mean, hey, if it worked, it worked.
No,
you know,
I think it's fantastic.
I ain't no way
if there's somebody
that
I want to do well, it's this man.
Yeah, no way begrudging that. But so for a long time, it was pretty difficult to get these movies. I mean, we had these, but they were the VHSs. Many of them were lost to the touring van, and just the timing. Just in a time when you just sort of felt like everything was coming out on DVD, so it's sort of like, oh, it's cool. I'm sure this will be on DVD any day now. 20 years later,
and it's like
we
feel like
waiting.
Every year we're like, Russ Meyer stuff.
Yeah, is it? Can you get it?
Can I get up?
Arrow
like
did a thing, but again, it was still just from that. From those scans, they just weren't really that good.
Yeah.
And but if it was all you can get, Severin is doing just this incredible job, doing the most professional, just amazing restorations. You never seen these movies look this good ever.
Yeah.
And they have the commentary, which it's hard to tell when the commentary was done because, I guess he passed away in 2004. The Laserdiscs came out in 98, and Laserdiscs did have commentary. So I wonder if that's when the commentary is. So it never says what year it is,
maybe.
But it's just Russ Meyer, and it's pretty, they're pretty good. He's just kind of like, she's got great tits. Like, it's pretty good. But the extras on here, really the best extra on here is the inclusion of the Incredibly Strange Film Show episode from 1988. With Jonathan Ross, the UK show that has the Russ Meyer episode on that.
Mm-hmm.
So this Super Vixens has that, and then it has an interview with Charles Napier, aka Harry Smith, and some other stuff. So you get a great look at these movies. And so far, Super Vixens, Vixen, Beneath the Valley of the Ultra Vixens, Motor Psycho, and I believe one other. Oh, and Up are the ones they've done so far. Yeah. And I'm really hoping Faster Pussycat. I kind of assuming they're kind of waiting on that. I mean, Beyond the Valley of the Dolls is one that has always been available, but that was done by Fox.
Yes.
So, or whatever that was at that time. So that was like
major motion picture.
And that was his biggest movie.
Yes.
And so, you know, these movies, just doing himself. Now we get to really, really forever. Everyone is going to now see these like this. And I'm so happy because, I mean, it just looks incredible.
And, you know, thinking about in the last, 5 years, all of the love that John Waters has received, right? Like, Russ Meyer deserves a little of this blanket love for the world that he created, the vision he had, his resilience, his unwavering vision in terms of like tits and ass and campy sexuality, but with higher overarching truths about the nature of humans.
Yeah, I mean, and for me, Russ Meyer is something that is definitely more up my alley, and to me holds up like infinitely in this way that it's like this universal, just like when you start watching these movies over and over back in the day and then revisit them again 20 years later, you get, there's just so much more.
Yeah.
And it's even, they're better than ever, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I mean, so much stuff we watch is
and
like
it's
that,
a,
but
it's
these
a
especially.
Fantasy, and it's an ideal, but at the same time, there's this specificity to it.
Yeah.
That really makes everybody come alive. And truly, like in Super Vixens, like Super Angel, like the main villain.
The opening.
Main,
yeah.
The
yeah,
main.
Yeah.
Girlfriend, the main lady who's good, who's bad, everything about her, she like is Peg Bundy.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
It's
that whole,
like,
it's that whole idea of just like a.
But she's nastier. Like Peg Bundy has like a sweetness to her,
but Angel has a sweetness to her, and Peg Bundy has a nasty side. She
Angel is nasty now. Super Vixen, who is the same actress
when
later
you're
in the movie, is very
Super
sweet.
Angel. She's very happy.
If you don't do it exactly the way she wants it, she's gonna just tear
break
you to
all
pieces.
Your stuff. That's true.
And eventually, she's gonna get murdered. But Tara, let's get into it. Super Vixens. We get it started right away. Martin Bormann, who's in many of Russ Meyer's movies, and you get the. One thread that goes through a lot of the Russ Meyer movies is Martin Bormann, and is this like playing like the Nazi music, and he's like the Nazi.
Oh, my God, it's yes.
Of course, Up
he's
is
like,
going to be the most Nazified, but like there's a lot of
he like owns through. The filling station like, somehow, and he's just like listening to marches
like,
tectonic
like like marching music.
Yeah,
like
he's just like
that's like
some Wagnerian march.
Yeah. But like that's like Russ's like humor in a way, and of course. You know, what's amazing is that he was he filmed mm-hmm. World War II. That's what he did. That was his job.
Oh,
in the
that's
war.
Right. Yes. He was a filmographer.
Thank you. The word fell right in my head.
In World War II, and his footage can be seen on many documentaries, but especially in the film Patton.
Yeah, but he said in the commentaries that's how he, literally his filming style is, he learned it from that. And there's five things you do. It's like long shot, like close up, insert, reestablish action, and like one other thing, I can't remember exactly, but it's like,
wow.
But when he said that, it's like, oh, that's literally what, all what
yeah.
these, especially Super Vixens and Up, it's like all these cuts, and it's like the angle, the tons of the long shots, yeah, right? And then like the insert of like gyrating or like a stomach or like someone walking, yeah, or tits, you know, plenty of that. And then reestablish the action, you know? So it's like, it's pretty amazing that that is what the...
It's a pragmatic but effective approach.
And what's cool is in the Incredibly Streams film episode, Roger Ebert's in it a bunch because, of course, Roger Ebert co-wrote Beyond the Valley of Dolls with him. Ghost wrote other things, was on the set of Super Vixens multiple times, was very close with, yeah, with Russ Meyer. And he's saying, like, there's really no other... Russ Meyer loved movies, but there's really no other filmmaker that inspired him. It's truly... He's like a true auteur in that he wrote, direct, produced, edited everything, and did it in this style that he learned in the military.
Yeah.
And then
his inspiration was basic training.
Like, yeah, his love of like big tits.
Yeah.
And boom. He's like, there's literally nothing else.
Well, it's
like
that lady said, you're just like, whenever she said this, is just breast worship. And he said, that's only the half of it.
So it's pretty amazing just looking at it through that lens.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, we can go into the plot of this film, but, you know, it's not just big tits. It's big everything, right?
Big girl. Super.
It's super, exactly. It's just like in Super Vixens, but like the women have big tits, but the men have monster dongs.
Yeah, it's like the big fake dicks, which back then, especially in this era, and the way he did it was obviously very novel, and there's something that
certainly
fits perfectly.
There's modern prosthetic cocks everywhere.
Nowadays,
now
it's so lame.
Everybody.
It's just like,
everybody
it's so
has
lame
a prosthetic
now
cock.
The way Russ Meyer did it was definitely in this exaggerated, yes, purposefully over the top.
Yeah, like
way
you have to fold your cock and have to get it,
yeah,
back in your pants.
Yeah, so
it goes all the way
to
down.
Me,
to
it's
their
very
knees.
Different. Nowadays, it's ridiculous. It's either like show your cock or don't. But like back then, and even in this, there's a part where the guy does it just his normal cock. So it's like,
yeah,
it's done for a very different effect than it is, yeah, in stuff now. But
yes, it's a very, very different effect, but it balances well because the women aren't just like big-breasted women, that they're big personality women,
yeah,
and big, you know, individuals. Like, he, yeah, focuses in on the individuality.
And each of them have different personalities.
Yeah, they're
and
not
yeah
interchangeable, but it is like that.
Totally.
It's like in Gypsy when the burlesque dancers are like, you gotta have a gimmick, sweetie. But, like, it's not the gimmick. It's just that they're each so individual, and they have giant tits, giant hips, giant asses.
And
like, they're absolutely stunningly beautiful. Giant eyelashes, big red lips. They're just amazing, amazing.
And his goal for this movie was basically making this road movie that every 10 minutes or so there was a new chick. So it's like, I can't remember how many he said, and like 8 or 9 chicks are like the different segments are basically the, you know, the chicks every 10 minutes or so there's a new one.
Yeah.
And so that's pretty much how it goes. And
then the ladies are, so, you know, basically the tale is, and I can't, is the guy's name's Clint, right? The main.
Yeah. Clint Ramsey.
Okay. So Clint has a violent girlfriend, not wife.
Super Angel.
Her name is Super Angel. Now he works as a mechanic. And Super Angel is super jealous. And anytime she gets super jealous, she wants to punish Clint. She wants him to go home and fuck her immediately. And she also wants to punish him for having a wandering eye, even though he doesn't, by doing things such as smashing the windshield of his car or taking an axe to the hood of his truck or breaking all of the lamps of their home, which there are many lamps in that home. I think there are like 6 just in the living room alone. An amazing amount of lamps, right? Mariah Carey would be happy. No overhead lighting in this unit.
And the house itself was someone who worked on the film. Again, it's small crew. Everyone involved working behind the scenes was also either on camera for a small role, lent a hand, did something, and that was someone's house.
Actual.
And they really did
trash it. And they really did
it.
Trash yeah, the yeah, house. Yeah. That's great. So we had a little detour there. So Super Angel is super mean, and Clint finally is had enough. They have a giant fight. The horny neighbor, as she calls him, who likes to watch out for her all the time, because again, she's quite lovely and she goes out in various forms of lingerie. And you know who would be great in a Russ Meyer? What was the neighbor in Mary Hartman? Mary Hartman?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she would be she would be great. Who likes to be a country singer? No, she would be awesome in this film. Now, the horny neighbor calls the police because he's worried about the little lady. And Clint has to go away and stay away. So he goes to a bar all night. But while he's in the bar, the police that was called actually violently murders Super Angel because she's also a super bitch. And she makes fun of his inability to get a hard on. She's just generally very nasty. And he violently murders her. And when he finds out that he's wanted for murder, Clint has to go on the run. And he goes on the run, jumping from woman to woman, from adventure to adventure, from misadventure to misadventure, until he finally finds love in the end.
You nailed it, Tara. That is what this movie is. And, of course, the police officer, one Mr. Harry Sledge, Charles Napier, with the outstanding role in this movie is the totally maniacal villain of the movie. And, Tara, you said, you know, Super Angel gets murdered. It is a brutal, wild murder scene because, yes.
It's as much over the top as the look of everybody is over the top.
Yeah, Harry Sledge comes over and, you know, she's just ready to fuck. She's just always ready to fuck.
I mean, that's really all, you know, Super Angel wants is to get laid, and she wants to get laid good. And when Harry Sledge, like, his chiseled jawline, chiseled white teeth.
Yeah.
Penetrating blue eyes, perfect aviator sunglasses, blonde hair, like what a pinnacle of manhood. Wowza, wowza, as ultra feminine as she is, he is the ultra masculine. He is Tom of Finland. And the only problem with Harry Sledge is that he cannot get that monster dong hard. I'm thinking there ain't enough blood in his body to get that thing up.
And Super Angel lets him know how she feels about it. She is just so ruthless, just cutting him down. You can't get it up. You know, you so much muscle, but not the one that counts. Like,
and she's just nasty. About, you might as well get out of here, you worthless piece of shit.
Just so, so brutal.
He's like, your mouth ain't worth your ass. And this is Clint said, say one more thing about my mom and I'll bust your goddamn jaw.
Everyone's beating everyone up.
They're going ape shit. They're really
Harry
awful.
Harry Sledge, when he punches her in the stomach, and she's like, oh, like, and
so
then,
Harry Sledge finally has enough, and he just reels back. And that is one wild element in this is the men, like when Harry Sledge punches a woman right in the baby maker, it's crazy. It's like, it's shocking, right? Like, it takes you aback. Like, when it happens, you don't expect it to happen.
I mean, he beats the hell out of her eventually.
But that one especially, I think, is the nasty one. Even more so than like punching somebody in the face, even more so than the stabbing, the like punching her right in the gut as hard as he can is just like an obscene move.
Well, and eventually she locks herself in the bathroom and he gets a knife and is just like going insane, stabbing the door. And it is crazy. And like, it is like super violent and crazy. And he kicks down the door and then the door falls and has the knife still in it and like stabs her like through, like as it falls on her. Yeah. And then he just picks her up and throws her in the bathroom, is jumping on her and stomping on her.
Yes, it's super violent.
But this is amazing scene where she's not dead and she puts her hand over the bathtub and it's like bleeding down. And then the way she looks up, like she looks just, she's covered in blood and it just looks so incredible.
She looks like weak and terrified.
It looks so incredible. And then he eventually drops the clock in there and then just electrocutes her and the house burns down. Like, it is crazy. It's amazing.
And it somehow manages to be ultra violent. Violent and campy, but chilling at the same time.
Yeah, I mean,
there's something about it. It reminds me of like Verhoeven.
Yeah, totally. I mean,
absolutely,
it is crazy.
The violence reminds me of Verhoeven.
And in the interview with Napier, you know, he says like, you know, Russ was just like go crazy, and they did everything. Like, again, there's no stunt doubles. There's no Shari Eubanks is Super Angel, and then later Super Vixen. And they said, like, she was totally game for everything. Like, everyone was pretty much game for everything. Like, nobody was, like, you know, sensitive or just, like, everyone was like, yep. It's just, you know, everyone was just down for it.
Yeah, they weren't like, this is traumatizing. They knew what they were getting into. Yeah.
Yeah, and most of the movie is filmed in Arizona. I think the house, the interior of the house might might have been in California, but I think most everything else was in Arizona. So they were really in the hot desert. And Russ said he liked filming in the desert because it's just sort of harsh. And he liked the combination of the harshness of the desert and the landscapes with the soft tits and the women and stuff like that.
It looks amazing. I love the cacti. It does create like a color palette within they pop so much.
And it really does make it art. And there are these scenes, especially like the long shots when the women are on the mountain or in the desert. Like, it is really, really, like, to me, it's true art.
I mean, no arguments here. I think it's really stunning. Oh. And I just wanted to say some of the wonderful, you know, quotes. Like Angel says, you don't dance, you don't drink, you gotta be big in bed.
Big in
bed. I love the idea of somebody being big in bed. I did a really bad impression. Like, this has the most, like,
it's okay,
wonderful quotes in it, but I can't do them justice because, again, they're doing that woman filter that's almost like a voiceover, and the women are talking like this. Like whenever somebody's trying to taunt Super Angel over the phone, she picks up the phone after Clinton dropped it.
Yeah, Super Lorna.
Super Lorna, she's like, I can't wait to strap on your groovy old man. Like, it's so horny. Well, it's so good.
I wanted to point out Super Lorna because she actually is probably, for me, the hottest chick in 100%. The movie. And she's only in it. She's the first chick you see. And she's in. And you split with Super Angel. You see them both kind of going back and forth. But she's only in it. She's in it so short. And actually, you don't even see her.
Little white shorts.
You see her tits. She's the cover girl. And you see the tits in the red shirt. But you don't actually get to see her tits.
I was looking at this and I think, is that her?
Yes.
Or is that the Austrian?
No, it's her.
Because she's the teeth, see? And the Austrian just did a different top.
That's her.
Okay. Well, that's her. And you know better than me. And then, but for me, Super Haji, her face is just like perfect. Like, she's stunning. Like, I just think she's so.
So Haji.
Undeniably gorgeous.
So Haji's who he goes to, who's doing the bar where he goes to drink his troubles away. But so there is a level. What do I say? Oh, there's a mix of girls who will be in his movies before and after. And then there's girls who aren't in anything else after this. Lorna is one who's not in anything after. And crazily, Super Angel, Shari Eubanks, it seems like Sherry. She would have
written. Is it Shari?
It's Shari. S-H-A-R-I. And Napier pronounced it Shari.
He did pronounce it Shari. Okay.
I don't think Russ said. I can't remember what he said, but.
Well, if he pronounced it
Shari. I'm just going to call her Super Angel, and then now we're going to call her Super Vixen next time we talk about her. But
yeah. Sherry Shari.
She has a really incredible face, and her eyes are really incredible. It is shocking to me that she was only in like one other movie.
Yeah. She's stunning.
Yeah.
Like, in real life, I would be gobsmacked. I'd be
Did
like, oh
you
my
like
God.
Super Haji's outfit? Now, she's the bartender.
100%.
How cool would it be to go in a bar and she's your bartender?
I would just keel over with joy. I love her jewels on her face. She's covered in jewels. It's great. It's such a mood. I love it.
And Haji would have been in Motor Psycho, Faster Pussycat, Kill Kill, among a lot of other movies. But what's funny, too, with Clint Ramsey, our main man, is he's always. All these girls are just wanting to bang him, and he's just like not. That's the thing is, Super Angel is totally wrong. He's not cheating on her.
Yeah,
even when she's dead, he's like turning him down.
Why?
He's batting that pussy away.
Can I not think of that? What that device is called? Somebody screaming out right now. In literature, when like they're being tested, and like there's a whole word for it. And I'm gonna think of it as soon as we stop recording. But that is the point. Is that what makes him a character that we can all get behind? The reason he is the innocent protagonist is that he's not banging every chick he sees. Like, he's waiting to see if he likes them or if they're nice or if they get to know him. And he was even like semi loyal to Super.
He was totally loyal.
Angel,
totally loyal. He didn't. He wasn't gonna bang Lorna.
Yeah, he gave Super Haji's key back to her.
Exactly.
Like, all of these things. Like, he was being a good boy. But you know what? No good deed goes unpunished because he goes on a spree of punishment. So when he's on the road and he's hitchhiking his way, going out west, and a wonderful El Camino pulls over to pick him up, who is in it but Super Cherry and her gorgeous boyfriend?
Yeah, the Z-Man, who is also in Beyond the Valley of the Dolls.
That's the type of face you just can't trust. I mean, you look at it, like, he is so well cast, because you look at, like, those white teeth, those blue eyes, the tan, everything, and you're like, it's like, never trust a man with dimples. You can't trust that guy.
And Russ Meyer said he didn't get any other jobs after Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. That was his first job.
That's so wild.
Because he was so, like, he was just so wild in Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, which, again, we'll certainly be doing that at some point. We're going to be doing all the Russ Meyer movies at some point. But,
I mean, we've been needing. I mean, just we watch Beyond the Valley Dolls. We have to watch Beyond the Valley of the Dolls.
We watch Valley of the Dolls.
Did I say it the other way?
You said doesn't matter.
I'm not.
Everyone
best.
Heard you.
You all know what I did. I'm sorry.
But I love when Super Cherry's like, so what we like when we just. Talking about how beautiful my bod is, like the way
she's
talking about like masturbate. She's like,
I dig masturbation, like, man.
She's like, she's like, I came without even touching myself. Like I was just like rubbing my body or like what?
I had this spot under my left breast.
Yeah. He's like down for her to bang Clint, but Clint's and she's like reaching in his pants, but Clint's like turning him down.
Yeah,
and,
but he's also like, is this a trap, man?
Well,
and maybe he's tired too. You know, maybe he's tired of the abuse.
And
he's
our
like,
man is like, gets offended. He's like, hey, you turned her down. Like,
turn down Super Cherry? I'm going to have to come to fisticuffs over this, my guy.
Yeah. Ends up getting kicked in the nuts. I like when Super Cherry joins in the fight and she's like all like in it and they're like fighting.
I mean, Super Cherry is gorgeous too. Everybody is exponential.
She did porn. She did porn. She moved on to after porn. And actually, there's a few that we have.
Well, so did Russ Meyer.
No, not really. Russ Meyer never did.
I thought he did some penetration.
Absolutely not.
Oh, maybe.
No. And actually, he said, no, he absolutely did not. And he didn't want to. He never wanted to. But he said that on one of the movies, he let the actors and actresses actually bang. But then he decided to have a rule to not let them because he wanted the tension. So he wanted them to not come so that they had the tension and they had that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Well, okay. Yeah, I mean, you know, everybody, please forgive me. I'm so sorry. Thank you for listening to us here at Underground Espionage. I really appreciate it. And I am sick and a little. I have had half a glass of wine at this point, so you know how that goes.
Is that Underground Espionage if Tara doesn't apologize for the way she is?
Straight to my head. I apologize for everything I've said up until this point. Yeah. How about that?
Yeah.
But I did remember something I read about the timing of this film, and it was... So a film that he was doing with Edie Williams, which was one of his wives, was canceled.
So we did just do a quick pause. You didn't even know, but Tara had a nice coughing fit. You just heard the end of it there.
Mm-hmm.
And you were telling us about a film. Oh, just a little more.
Yeah, I got it.
You got it there?
I got it. I mean, you know,
about
no
a
promises.
Film that he was doing with one of his wives that was canceled.
In the wake of the United States Supreme Court's Miller versus California decision in June of 1973, it modified the definition of obscenity from that of utterly without social redeeming value to that which lacks serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value. His marriage to Edie Williams subsequently disintegrated. And he said after that, those years were very confusing to me, but instead of rushing off and throwing myself out the window, I was able to psychoanalyze myself and discern what was best for me. I looked myself square in the face and realized I couldn't do everything. So then, in 1975, he released Super Vixens, a return to the world of big bosoms, square jaws in the Sonoran Desert, and it earned $8.2 million during its initial theatrical run in the United States.
Yeah, and it was
good for him.
It was successful, and you know, after Up would come after this, and then Beneath the Valley of the Ultra Vixens, and then he said, really, what had happened was these movies. There was really the places for them to play were less and less because regular movie theaters were going just towards the mall and like, you know. If it was X, it wasn't going to get shown there.
Yeah.
But these weren't porn, so they weren't also going to be shown in porn theaters. So it's kind of like, you know...
It's that in-between phase.
Like Jess Franco, where so it's like these probably would have played in Europe the same place that Jess Franco
or John
would
Waters.
Played.
Like the content makes it rated X, but it's not necessarily because there's penetration.
Yeah, whereas like...
You're not really going to jerk off to it, per se.
Like John Waters went and, you know, made, you know, more quote-unquote movies that could be just shown...
Yeah.
you know, Ross Marrow just wasn't what he wanted to do. And so this would be highly successful and the most successful after Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. But
well, it's just a fantastic film. It deserves all of that success.
Absolutely. So we were just where Super Cherry and her man were beating up Clint, stole his wallet, stole his money, kicked him in the nuts.
Left for dead on the roadside with no dough,
but there's
only some denim and some sore balls. But you know, thank goodness a kind-hearted farmer with a horny wife pulled up in his truck and offered him a hand.
This section is probably the most fun, and you're with one of the wildest. Super Soul Ushi. Let's see if I can pronounce
it. Oh, what do it. Do it. I want you to do it. I do. I do.
Ushi Degard, Swedish actress, though she is, the farmer says she's Austrian in this, and she is crazy. And Russ Meyer in the commentary has nothing but amazing things to say about her. Says she has a crazy sexual appetite, even up to this day, which, again, whatever he was doing that commentary.
What is that? Yeah.
So said.
How does he know?
He friends with her and her husband. So, like, I don't think he was even saying that from experience, because she was married to the same guy forever.
It's amazing.
And I think they just remained friends.
And what
forever.
A rack on that gal. Oh. She seems so good natured. What a lovely smile. Big set of chompers in her head.
And she's just ready to rock.
She just seems earnest. And when they fuck so hard, they're shaking the barn. And
so
you just
good.
See Clint all over the farm, being a farmhand. He wasn't digging the post holes, but he was putting up fences, hammering, sawing, doing things of that nature. And all you see are the farmer and his wife, as he calls her, his mail order bride, just fucking on a tire swing and fucking in the field. And that's kind of like that montage of, you know, him in the foreground where some people are banging in the background. I would say that's the like most classic image that you see from this.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
see it taken out of context. I've seen it on memes. Like, just
up until
people don't know exactly where it comes from.
Yeah. And just that the cutting back of all the different fucking, and eventually, like, at one point, he's like, looks like he's fucking a chicken. And he told the guys, like, why don't you look like you're fucking a chicken? Like, he's like, really? All right.
Yeah, so that she's running around, and then he's running around with a chicken over his crotch.
Yeah. It's
all in good fun,
it's
people.
It's so great. And it is just this wild, chaotic. That's the thing, is like, it's just the chaos of it all.
Yeah.
And that'll really ramp up with Up and Beyond the Valley of the Ultra Fictions, the next two movies. But, like, the chaos of it all really ramps up.
As does
in
the telling
movies.
Of a tale in a classical way.
I'm so excited to talk about Up.
I can't wait to do Up. I mean, that's one of the first things we watched together, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's Up.
Other than Cannibal Holocaust
and
Cannibal Ferox, Sleepaway Camp, Up.
Yeah, Up was up there. But to me, Up and Super Fictions are my two favorites, so I am excited. But of course, Clint can't stick around this farm. He's got to.
Well, he can't, because everywhere he goes, these chicks are trying to bang him.
They want to bang. I love when she's like, just like shaking her tits in his face. She's like,
she just won't let him get out of it. And then she follows up into the top of the barn and just attacks him, follows him up nude while her husband's digging post holes. And of course he comes and finds them, and he says, "Ward of treachery, desecrator of connubial bliss." And it's
so
just
good.
Things like this do where you're like, you know, he liked W.C. Fields. You know what I mean?
Oh,
that
yeah.
is
you
such
like, you know, he liked
a W.C. Fields joke. Marx Brothers, but especially W.C. Fields type of humor. And it's absolutely classic. So then, of course, he chases him off the farm, and he comes upon a hotel, and he has a new problem. And his new problem is, it's not the wife of the man who is housing him. It is the mute daughter of the man who's housing him. And I thought it was an actual lovely, and her name is Super Eula. And Super Eula is phenomenal, hot tamale. She's fantastic. My favorite element of Super Eula is that she's supposed to be like a teen, but she's wearing a choker around her neck, which is an apple core, like the apple's already been eaten. You know what I mean? It's great.
And
I thought that was perfect.
And what's so great, too, is she's black, and her dad, as Ibra says in the commentary, is white as the driven snow.
Yes. But there's like zero way that that's her father.
But I like that it's never explained. Nope. Or is ever, he's just
don't
like, my daughter.
It's my daughter, and I'm here to protect her, and we lost her mother.
It's
like
so
perfect.
Good. It's so funny. Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, that kind of humor is what I love about Russ Meyer. Just like,
yes.
That you don't, it doesn't get explained. It's just that. And it's like,
and
hilarious.
It doesn't need to be explained.
And she's deaf and mute, and she's dancing and trying to bang, and she wants to go on this, like, go kart. Type.
No, they got like modified thing. Dune buggies. So
dune
they have,
buggy. That's
they
what
have
I
like
was
a yeah. They have like a dune buggy modified Volkswagen, and then they have another form of dune buggy. What is that? I think that's still a dune buggy. I think they're both dune buggies.
But yeah, the chase is great. And again, like you said when you were watching, you're like, she's really like strapped in the back. And like, you're right. She is. There's no stunts. Clint is driving it and she is in the back.
And she is bouncing around.
Her tits
the hills.
Are just bouncing around.
And they're amazing. She's amazing. And every bump they go over, you're like, my God, she's going to fly right out of that thing. There's no seatbelt. She's just hanging on.
Yeah, no, that's all. They literally, they are the ones
her
doing
it. Her tits aren't hanging on, though. They're bouncing all over.
They are bouncing.
But you know what? Everybody's all smiles, and it seems like it's a really fun time. Like, I bet this part was super fun.
Yeah, I mean, Charles Napier said, like, you know, Russ could definitely be, you know, tough
Who
at
said
times.
That?
Harry Sledge.
Yeah, okay.
Could definitely be tough at times. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was all like when we talk about these underground movies, like a Jess Franco movie where it's a small cast and crew. Everyone is, you're either in it or you're not in it. And you're not, it's just like how when we work on something or when you're invested
or you can't do it.
Yeah. It's what
it's just not going
to
work.
You show up early to help set up, you stay late to help break down. And there's, you're not asking for anything else, and you're doing it because this is what you want to be doing. Mm-hmm. And even like, you know, Russ did have, you know, some more money because of Beneath the Valley of the Dolls. Whereas like Jess Franco, a lot of times we're working on, I mean, we're talking, you know, three actors, a sound guy, maybe not a lighting guy, maybe a sound guy, and Jess Franco. So
Jess Franco's like, I'm setting up the shot. I'm going to go be in the shot.
Compared to many Jess Franco movies, this is like Titanic being filmed. But this is still like completely low. Again, very minimal crew. Everyone who's driving, who's working behind the counter, coming up to get gas, they're all people who are behind the scenes people in the crew. Right.
But this scene is so fantastic. And of course, he has to run away and jump into yet another car to get out of the area so that he is not, you know, further mauled by father, husband, whatever. I'm going
to
choke.
Do it. Do you go for it. And we eventually get to our final section in the movie. And it's another strange thing because, again, not explained. And it's basically almost a strange restart. Because what happens is he's pulling up to Super Vixen's Oasis, a gas station, and off in the distance on this crazy-looking phallic mountain in the desert, Super Angel appears in fire, all bloody. And then at the Super Vixen's Oasis, we have the same actress, and now it's Super Vixen all in white.
And down and smiling upon Clint, and it looks like, as she was Super Angel, it looks as though she's an angel, and you're like, Is she cursing him like the devil, like, well, Pele on a mountaintop, or is she actually going to help him because she realizes she loves him and he was much better than the guy who murdered her?
Russ Meyer said in the commentary is that it's, what is it, thus spake...
Zarathustra?
That's what he says, is she's Zarathustra.
Love it.
And that's what this is, and it's sort of like a restart. It's a totally different part, like totally out of context, because not only do you have the same actress being Super Vixen, then we have Harry Sledge shows up, but either Clint doesn't recognize him. I think it's totally unexplained
why Clint doesn't know him. But Clint only saw him one time, you know? So, like, he won't be as iconic in Clint's mind.
Yeah.
And he wasn't expecting it there. But, it is Clint doesn't know who it is, but Harry Sledge knows who Clint is. And he recognizes Super Angel in Super Vixen.
Yeah, Harry Sledge knows what's happening.
And he begins his plot. And, you know, I thought of, like, Hera on the mountaintop. Maybe it's because we've been watching so many Greek myths and thinking about Greek myths. But I was thinking of, you know, Hera, and sometimes she's scornful and sometimes she's not.
But to me, that's one of the great, beautiful and artistic scenes in it is when she's on spread eagle on top of that
blue sky, clear blue sky behind her, her hair billowing in the wind, and she's, you know, rocking on a pivot point of her nether regions.
Her pussy, Tara?
Well, I was going to say twat.
I like twat.
But I wanted
something
a little more poetic. You know what I mean?
I don't. I like pussy. I still think is the best. But
the pussy pivot point, is that what you're looking for?
Which, as Russ Meyer in the commentary said, it was one of the guys who had a catcher's glove and was holding her up, and she was actually riding on the catcher's glove, not on the rock. Because I was actually wondering how they did that.
She's rocking back and forth.
How are they?
Feet are out, and like, how is she doing it? Like, she doesn't scratching it all up.
He goes,
I can say vulva too. I like vulva. You don't like vulva?
Nah. He said, he goes, yeah, put the catcher's glove there so that one, you know, chew up her lips. Like, the way he says it in the commentary. It is great to watch it with the commentary.
Like chewing gum.
Yeah. It is pretty good. But I mean, that's the thing is, like, a lot of these scenes, it is like, how did they do that? And, you know, they're running up and down these mountains and, like, they're really just doing that. It's like, it was a real workout.
Yeah, I would imagine. I bet it's steaming hot workout. So again, in the fever pitch of this film, you know, we establish that Super Vixen needs help at her gas station. Clint has experience. He's going to stay and help her.
And they
are so cute and happy together. They fall in love. They're having a great time.
But you know who hates love and wants to destroy love? Harry Sledge.
Well, and he loves Super Vixen and he thinks she's just so great.
No, Clint thinks that. And Harry Sledge hates her.
Oh, that's right. He does hate her. That's right.
He wants to destroy their love.
He wants to destroy their love. So, you know, so then we end in this fever pitch of violence and cartoon dynamite and things. It's very cartoonish but amazing. Battlefield of Harry Sledge kidnapping Super Vixen,
tying her
and eventually she ends up with her clothes, you know, ripped off of her, tying her down to rocks while he tosses dynamite at Clint.
It's crazy. Yeah, you know, it's totally chaotic. And again, they're really obvious. They're really doing this. You know, there's a great scene where she's trying to like flirt with him to get her to let
and
her
and it becomes
go.
Like fantastical again.
And
amazing.
She's jumping on this spring, this bed spring with no mattress. I love that
bed.
Scene.
And it was the same bed, I think, that was in the other one.
Yeah.
Because she had been chained to there. She was hanging on the
in
brass
the commentary,
bed.
Russ
yeah.
Meyer's like, that brass bed always reminds me of like a whore's bed. Like,
like in the Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. That's definitely the bed they had in the Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. Yeah, I get him there. It's brilliant having her bouncing on a bed of box springs with nothing on it. It's just essentially clear so you see everything. It's amazing.
But that at a certain point when she's
pinchy.
And
they're playing Dixieland.
Yeah, and
like that was
it's so great. And he's shooting Clint. Clint's like all shot up and bloody and he ends up throwing Clint unconscious body on top of Super Vixen. And Super Vixen's like, we're love and you're evil. We're love, love, love.
Love.
Yeah. And eventually the dynamite does come back to haunt Harry Sledge, and he thinks the dynamite is a dud, but instead explodes.
Well, I like to think it was enchanted by Super Angel to not explode, and then when it came back, she like blew it up. But again, you know, they exploit that cartoonish nature of how that happened with the dynamite.
Yeah, yeah. And, even
and then at the end they say, leaping lizard.
Leaping lizard. It is an incredible, incredible movie. We love it.
I can't believe you have endured all of
it.
I'm so sorry.
If you have the coughing, it is.
It's terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
This is what Mike has to deal with every.
So in some way, you know, I've been deciding, like, am I going to edit it? No, you know what? Everyone else
edit?
Needs to. Everyone else
maybe
needs
listen
to
it and make sure it's not, like, unbearable. I don't know who you would, like.
I mean, I'm putting this up. Like,
I mean, if I could.
I don't really have time to edit it.
You know, but if I could help it. I would not cough, but I cannot.
But maybe I need to give everyone, you know, a taste of...
A little break?
No, a taste of, like, what the end of the night is for me. I'm just kidding, Tara. Of course, you're the one going
through
it.
I wish there
were
a cure. I don't. There isn't. I have always wanted, like, I wish there was, like, a way which I could just get like a new respiratory system put in me. But it's just like, hey, but you know what? It's like super vixens. It's like you get things that are exponential and like, and just like Clint, you know, he has to pay the price for his ultimate reward in the end. You know, it's a hero's journey where he has to pass these stages of torment in order to get to the prize that's at right. the end. And that's what you have to go through, and Mike. And that's what you wonderful people have to go listeners. Through. You're going through these ages of torment to get to the prize at the end.
The end of the episode. Well, we'll see. We'll see if I've done any editing. You'll know by now if I have. I don't know. We'll just.
I bet they won't because we'll you can't edit it all out.
What happens, but. Man, I'm just really excited to be in the world of Russ Meyer. I'm excited to talk about all the other new restorations that Severin's been doing. I'm really hoping they're going to be doing more because there's, you know, there's still a ton more. There's Faster Pussycat Kill Kill, Mudhoney, Lorna. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch. Harry, there's one that's like Harry, Cherry, and Raquel.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds like a fun one.
Yeah, so
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, same. And I think that's the first movie with Harry Sledge, mm-hmm. you know, because it's one of those where they use the same, you know, he's Harry Sledge, you know, throughout.
So cool.
But excited to do that. And like I said, yeah, Up is, you know, we actually watched Up relatively recently and even before we started doing the podcast mm-hmm. and we wrote down like, oh, we want to do Up, you know, in an early episode. We just hadn't gotten around to it. But Supervision just felt like this is the first yep. Russ Meyer we need to do.
That's great.
And it felt right, especially after a week off. We had to come back with the classic. So go watch Super Vixens. Do it again and keep doing it. And enjoy these wonderful giant tits.
I mean, there's something so wonderful about all of it. Everything's so exponential. It's not just the knockers, everybody. It's not just the tits. And just like Russ Meyer said, big tits, that's only half of it. And I say, it's maybe even less than half of it. The big tits are just the big, juicy cherry on top.
Well, I'm here for the tits, so I would say.
You do like the big, juicy cherry on top. You always eat it.
I do. Well.
You do. I do. That's why when I make you a Manhattan, darling, put two cherries in it.
That's true.
So you can eat one at the beginning and one at the end.
I do like two cherries in my Manhattan. Well, Tara, why don't you get back to that wine? We'll get back to the, say it again, I don't want to say it, Ponch.
Should I finish this one glass of wine that I've had? Oh, there's a cool fly in
it. We need to drink some wine. I got a little friend. And listen to Pont Alexandra. You said I'm not going to say it.
Pont Alexandra.
And yeah, don't know what we'll be doing next week, but hey, you know it's going to be something good. You faithful listeners of Underground Espionage and new listeners. I know we had a few recently, some hitting me up. Thank you
new listeners. And I'm so sorry that I coughed and was disgusting on this episode. It's not indicative of my state every week. However, it is not infrequent. So I apologize. And again, it's the price we pay.
It is the price we pay. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you. Thank you.